Today's podcast is made possible by Syntec, a leading distributor of technology brands in South Africa, which include Orico computer peripherals. The Orico brand is built on the design and manufacture of innovative peripherals that simplify your workspace. Whether you're working from home or at the office, Orico has the solutions to streamline your workspace. Orico products are available online from Takealot.com. Hello everybody and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz and joining us today is Clinton Mathos.
That's me. Hello everybody.
And Robin Lichetti.
Hi.
How are you guys doing today?
The same. I saw some cool showcase stuff this week, which we're going to talk about, but it's been very run-of-the-mill.
And yourself, Robin?
Yeah, not much has changed from last week. Everything's blurring into one.
All right, let's get straight into it. Clinton, this week you attended a Disney showcase.
Yes, it's got a very long name. Disney's usually good at coming up with names of stuff. It was the Walt Disney Africa Winter Spring 21 Media Networks Content Showcase. Very long name.
I think it's very, it gets to the point.
We'll just call it the showcase for now. And basically what this was, it was just showing us what is coming to TV during the winter and spring season. And I don't know why it's winter and spring. We don't use that in South Africa, but the winter and spring season here in the country. And let's start with what everyone wants to know. When you talk about TV and Disney, you want to know about Disney Plus and nothing. So during the showcase, the site that Disney was using to have their little live stream, it had a Q&A section, and an anonymous user says, is there any news on Disney Plus and when it will be available in South Africa? And Disney said, we know everyone is super excited about Disney Plus! There's no news to share at the moment, but we promise to once there is, smiley face. So yeah, that's a big... it's a big dud. I think everyone really wanted to get some kind of information. I mean, even just the release window would have been great. But we didn't get any of that. Instead, they only showed off kids, not kids program, television programming in the strictest sense. TV on a television set, usually through DSTV. They talked about DSTV quite a lot. And once again, I have to bring up that we've missed so much in South Africa. The Mandalorian, WandaVision, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the new show Loki starting soon, and we're just not going to get it in South Africa at all. The only thing we're getting that is a quote-unquote Disney Plus streaming exclusive is Black Widow, but we're getting that at the theaters. And I don't know if you guys know this, but the vaccine rollout is going very slowly right now. And going to the theaters is still a bit of a gamble in terms of your health and safety. So, yeah, it was very disappointing. We all, I think everyone who was at the showcase, except the people organizing it, we were all expecting to hear something about Disney Plus, and we got nothing instead. So, yeah, bit of a dud in that respect. They did show some cool stuff. Another thing I just wrote about, which will feature in the story, again, links to everything we discuss, is called The Magic Is Me. And it is a very, My Magic Is Me. It's a very interesting concept for a show where they've taken 12 kids from around Africa and each of them has an episode. And the episode starts off with a 1 minute live action segment where they talk about themselves, their hopes and dreams. You know, what about them is magical? You know, Disney's all about magic and stuff like that. That's the focus of the channel. But then after that live action segment, there'll actually be an animated segment. So it's a kind of a double show, which is really interesting. And there's only 12 episodes and they're a minute long, so there's not a lot of content, but what is there is really cool. Unfortunately, I did get to see some of it in the showcase, but I can't share that with you because I'm not allowed to share what was actually in the showcase, except in the third-hand manner, which I'm doing now. But in the story that we've got on the site, by the time you're listening to this, we do have some behind-the-scenes shots so you could see what we're talking about. So yeah, that was the long-named Disney showcase for the winter and spring season in terms of television. Nothing you wouldn't expect. No Disney Plus. And the Disney shows that are coming are still coming to the Disney channels. And it's not just Disney Channel. You must remember it's Disney Junior, Fox, ESPN, National Geographic, and National Geographic Wild. And all of that programming you can just find inside of the DSTV schedules if you're so inclined. But you can check out the links below this podcast for the specific stuff we talked about.
I just think it's weird how Disney went that whole thing without mentioning Disney Plus once.
It's very telling.
It's just so weird to me. It's like, hey, look at all these cool things we have. But what about the others? No, ignore that. Ignore Star Wars. Ignore Marvel. We don't have those, especially not for you here in Africa.
It's been very disappointing. I mean, the Marvel movies have the highest grossing, what's called, box office records. I think they have like first to third place every year. And sometimes South Africa even got some of those movies ahead of the US. And this hasn't always been a big market for Marvel and Disney, but it's always been a very loyal market in terms of performance. So for us to still be, and Star Wars, not just Marvel, for us to still be left in the dark is very disappointing. For them to not have anything in the showcase about it, and we have to kind of ask in the Q&As, it's disappointing to say the least. And I just want to point this out, and I did put this in the story, but a lot of South Africans have been talking about all these shows that are not available in the country. How do you think they're doing that, Disney?
Arr! It has to be some way.
If only there was some way to get around your restrictions. If only there was some way. But you know, unfortunately, I don't think there is, Brendan.
No, there isn't. There most definitely is no way to watch Disney content without Disney Plus. That is something I know for a fact, and I'm happy to be proven wrong.
That technology just doesn't exist.
Doesn't. Not in 2021. But yeah, check out Clinton's coverage of what happened at the Disney Showcase. I'm not even going to try and recite the whole thing. Take a look at that. Moving onwards, I'm sure earlier this month you guys noticed that Twitter, yes, because that's a real place, Twitter removed the cropping on certain images. So now you'll see more expanded images in your Twitter timeline. And at the time, I wondered whether this was related to a potential gender and race bias of Twitter's algorithm. The algorithm is known as a saliency algorithm. And what it does, or rather what it did, to kind of throw forward a little bit, is that it's tried to determine what part of an image you were most likely to be interested in. So if there was a photo of a whole human, then it would show you the face. Or if there was a whole group of people, it would show you something that was perhaps the most prominent thing in the image. Unfortunately, last year it was discovered that this algorithm might be biased when folks took to Twitter and started posting images of a black man and a white man, most notably Mitch McConnell and Barack Obama, and seeing which one the algorithm would favor. And the majority of times we saw this, it was a white man, Mitch McConnell, that was favored. So Twitter went and investigated, and it says that, our algorithm was problematic. So what it found is that in comparisons of men and women, there was an 8% difference from demographic parity in favor of women. So what's demographic parity, Brendan? So essentially, demographic parity would mean that no matter who the algorithm is presented an image of, it will showcase them accurately 50% of the time. So if it's 8% difference in demographic parity in favor of women, means that 8% of the time you'll see a woman more than a man. In comparisons of black and white individuals, there's a 4% difference from demographic parity in favor of white individuals. In comparisons of black and white women, there was a 7% difference from demographic parity in favor of white women. And in comparisons of black men and white men, there was a 2% difference from demographic parity in favor of white men. Twitter also wanted to test whether its algorithm has objectification bias, or something known as the male gaze. This is where the algorithm may have cropped an image to showcase a woman's chest or her legs rather than her face. Twitter said, "We didn't find evidence of objectification bias. In other words, our algorithm didn't crop images of men or women on areas other than their faces at a significant rate." So what has Twitter done? Well, I think we all know it ditched the algorithm. Said the head, the director of software engineering at Twitter, Ruman Chowdhury, she said, "We consider the trade-offs between the speed and consistency of automated cropping with the potential risks we saw in this research. One of our conclusions is that not everything on Twitter is a good candidate for an algorithm, and in this case, how to crop an image is a decision best made by people." I don't know. That's shocking. That's a shocking revelation to me, you know?
This happens every time. They try and automate something, and then it turns out racist. And then they're like, "Oh, well, we didn't do that. The computer decided it." Now, we'll put aside the whole point of engineering where you say, junk in and junk out. And then we're just back at square one. I just don't understand why they needed to crop stuff in the first place. Just have things uncropped. And if it's too big to fit into the UI, then just crop it from the borders inwards. Well, and then you can never be accused of being biased because it's an automatic system.
So Twitter did say that the reason it did this initially was to make it so that when you opened your Twitter feed, there wasn't a huge long-necked bird taking up your entire feed and you wouldn't have to scroll forever. Never mind the fact that when Twitter allowed the extra characters to be typed, people went berserk with that. And it was just like lines and lines and lines of a single tweet. Never mind that that became a problem. This was what they decided to do, was to implement the saliency algorithm. And it turns out that it didn't work. And I could have told them this for free from the start, that it would have ended badly for them, because any way that you were going to do this, it was going to do things that you didn't want. And like Clinton says, garbage in, garbage out. And this is just another example of bias in an algorithm that has been developed by humans. And I'm sorry, I don't buy the, "Well, the algorithm did it." Somebody made that algorithm. You got to take ownership of the issue. But yeah, Twitter has ditched this. We'll have a link to the story at the bottom of this post, as always. And hopefully it learns from this, or even though probably not. Robin, what have you got for us?
Yeah, I guess something involving Twitter, and then another thing Twitter adjacent, I guess. So in November of last year, Twitter announced that it would be opening up verifications again. So people could try and get the blue tick on their profile, which we know is highly valuable social currency in this day and age. It said the program will start up again in 2021. I didn't say when 2021. We've been waiting and checking out the Twitter verification page for more information over the past few weeks, and now it is finally available. But you have to gonna have to wait. So Twitter confirmed that the ability to apply for a Twitter verification will appear in the settings tab of your profile on mobile. So you're going to have to wait for it to appear. For some people, it might appear sooner than others. At the time of recording for Hypertext's Twitter profile, it has not appeared. So we're going to be waiting anxiously to apply and see how we can get verification as a news organization and kind of how simple that process is. So it will be interesting to see what Twitter verification does, at least from a journalistic standpoint, how that impacts the reach of our tweets, the kind of audience we can garner from that kind of thing. It will just be, I guess, a rather interesting experiment to see how it pans out, provided, of course, we get that blue tick.
Yeah. During this whole time where they were saying, "Oh, no verification, so many accounts were verified." If you are rich and famous enough and you don't have a Twitter account for whatever reason, you can just make one and have zero followers and get it verified. There are back channels to all of this. I mean, it's like everything in life. It's who you know. And these companies who represent the celebrities know people who can just say, "Oh, yeah, I need this verified. Oh, sure thing." And then every time there's a new movie that's coming out, the movie needs a Twitter account, and that Twitter account will be verified as soon as it's created. We see this all the time. And they always BS us. They're like, "Oh, no, it's closed for now. No verifications." And then a new account gets verified. So, ugh. What's the thing? It's always different rules for us plebs and the rich. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely not greasing Jack Dorsey's palms. We'll see what happens with our Twitter verification application. Hopefully successful, fingers crossed. Then another announcement for South Africa was Clubhouse on Android. At the beginning of the week, Clubhouse sent out a tweet to kind of say that the beta version, which was tested out in the US, will now be rolled out to selected countries across the world, and then will be globally released on Friday, which is when we're recording today. We checked out the Google Play Store to kind of see what was happening. And at around about 10:30, we saw that the Clubhouse app went from pre-registering, which you could do to be notified as to when you can actually install it, to now being able to install. So now you get to access Clubhouse. And again, I think it's going to be a very interesting experiment just as far as what people use it for, because I think a lot of the time, at least at the early part of the year, Clubhouse was very exclusive because it was iOS and invite only. And that was a lot of the allure, the fact that it was quite exclusive. Now that the entire Android community has access to it, essentially, does that allure, that luster kind of go away? And I'm quite interested to see if there's actually any interest into using Clubhouse long term. And then we've also got the likes of Twitter with their Spaces app that's coming on down the line. Facebook has announced a similar kind of rival app, as has LinkedIn, which I think is going to be more business focused. But it looks like there's a lot of moves being made as far as the spatial audio space goes. And yeah, now you get to use Clubhouse if you really, really want to.
I don't know how successful they're going to be. I think it's got a big wave now, and then it's gonna kind of patter out. I don't know if you guys share that opinion.
I mean, hasn't something like this been done before, like an audio social network, and it didn't do very well?
There's been so many social media networks.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's kind of had their hand at it, and yeah, I don't know. It just feels weird to me, you know, like audio only. Like, I understand the audio medium is gaining traction, especially with podcasts and that sort of stuff, but do you really want to tune in to somebody talking about absolutely nothing for 20 or so minutes? I don't know.
What, to have audio tweets for a while? What happened to that feature? I remember writing that story. It's like, oh, it's coming soon, but that was like a year ago now, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one, right? It's just it goes against everything else that social media is these days, which is visual, right? Like, I mean, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, even YouTube have started this push towards short format video that can go viral in an instant. And then you have Clubhouse, which is like, hey, just listen to people's voices. Okay. What's the fool here?
Voice notes are the worst part of any group chat. So I'm not at all interested in this, but I'm also a fuddy-duddy, so maybe it's a kid to a rock.
I don't want to have to troll through Clubhouse looking for important information for a story.
Yeah.
If I'm having to do that, then I'm going to get a little bit frustrated.
Oh, man. Can you imagine some companies do announcements only on Clubhouse?
Well,
you have to listen to our press release.
It's already happened, Clinton. Yesterday, SAS hosted a Clubhouse-only chat about digital literacy, which they were saying is, oh, this is very important. Everybody should be data literate. Join us on Clubhouse for this chat, which is just like, okay, so it's a very important topic that you're hosting on a platform which is currently only available on iOS in most places, and that you need an invite to join. And I was just like, what? Like, it's not like for the last year we've all been using Zoom and Google Meet and Microsoft Teams, hell, YouTube, Discord, Twitch. There are so many ways that you can host a conversation. Why pick the most exclusive, most like limited platform on the face of the planet? So, like, I really don't understand this. I get the idea of, oh, we want to be fashionable, but at the price of, like, reach, I don't know. And it's just going to get worse because, like you say, it's this exclusivity thing and the sheen is nice and I don't know.
Audio press releases.
Please no.
We're getting too old, gents.
Maybe we are. Maybe we're just dinosaurs of a bygone era.
We're going to be replaced by Zoomers.
One of the most important elements of a streamlined workspace is cable management. Even the most cluttered environment can look orderly and pristine with Orico's hook and loop cable ties. And once you've bundled your cables together, you can use Orico's desktop cable clip to ensure your cables are easily accessible. Orico products are available from takealot.com.
Right, let's have a discussion this week about smartphones. So earlier this week, I reviewed the Samsung Galaxy A32, which is a smartphone that retails for under 5,000 Rand. In fact, you can get it for like 4,000 Rand if you look hard enough. And it's a really good phone for the price. But once I started to use it and using it for like my daily driver and that sort of thing, I realized that it was very underpowered. And maybe this is just a product of me being spoilt by premium smartphones. But it got me thinking about whether premium smartphones and budget smartphones are really playing in the same field nowadays. And what I mean by that is Qualcomm earlier this week put out a press release stating that a number of previously premium features would be coming to mid-range smartphones with the Snapdragon 778G, which is a 5G chip for mid-range smartphones. And it got me thinking because this little budget smartphone from Samsung has a number of really good like premium features. For instance, it has an in-screen fingerprint scanner, which is a bit hit or miss. I don't really like that, but it is something that has previously only been in the higher tier smartphones from Samsung. But other things as well, like one of the models of this phone has up to 8 gigs of RAM, which is pretty much unheard of in the budget smartphone space. And I kind of it's making me wondering whether there is a space for both or whether budget smartphones are becoming more popular because their feature sets are becoming more in line with premium smartphones. So I just wanted to gauge your guys' opinion. Let's start with you, Robin, because you dabble with a lot of smartphones here at Hypertech. So do you think that premium smartphones are kind of running their course? Like there's not really a need to have them anymore?
I think as far as pushing the boundary in terms of specifications and capabilities, there's always going to be a place for premium smartphones. That said, I really feel like nowadays you're able to pick up a really well-specced phone for a lot of money. I remember writing about this Oppo A74 5G, which costs around about 7,500 Rand, and it's a 5G phone, 6.5-inch Full HD display, supports up to 90 hertz refresh rates. It's got 48 megapixel camera on the back, 6 gigabit RAM. I mean, those are features that, say, 3-4 years ago, you would only kind of see in the kind of premium space. And now it's kind of percolating down into the mid-range and the more affordable mid-range. So, yeah, I think that for a long time, the mid-range market was really saturated with a lot of devices that were okay, but not necessarily gave you premium features. So if you really wanted that kind of killer smartphone experience, you had to spend a bit more money. But I think nowadays we're kind of seeing that you can get good bang for your buck. And I mean, I've mentioned Oppo now, but Samsung as well. I know they have that terrible jingle about awesome phone, awesome battery. Like they say awesome like 20 times in 30 seconds. But they really are like kind of pushing the boundary as far as great features in a relatively affordable device. I know there was a big push from the co-CEO, DJ Co. I think a year or two ago, he kind of mentioned that the mid-range space is kind of where they're going to make a lot more of their money than the premium space. And it makes sense because, I mean, the iterative nature of these flagship phones, we can't be spending 25-30K on a new phone every single year. That's not just not feasible. So, yeah, I'm really all for this whole kind of budget mid-range phone. I think you can really find a good device there.
Clinton?
No, I was just going to say there are some people with more money than sense that are getting that 30,000 rand phone every single year, and they think it's absolutely necessary. But that's a discussion for another day. All of this reminds me of laptops, because I feel that there's a lot of similarities here. Like you said, Brendan, we're a bit spoiled where we use a phone or any other device and we think, oh, this is a bit too slow for me or whatever. But if you gave it to somebody else, they would think it's fine. And I think as we go on, that's becoming less true, because people are becoming more computer literate. And also, I mean, if you're using something slow, you can tell, right? Even if you're using fast internet, if you try to load a page and the page takes a few minutes to render, even if you don't know why that's happening, you don't need to know that the GPU is struggling because you also have a YouTube video in the background. You don't need to know all of that technical stuff. You just know this is taking a long time.
Mm.
And I bring this up because my dad, I don't want to say he got scammed, but he got advised into a poor purchase by a salesman into buying a laptop that was very underpowered, even for the price that he paid. And I'm sitting here with, you know, a gaming desktop that I built, and I sometimes have to use his computer, and it's infuriating. I don't know how it's legal that they can sell stuff like that that's so slow. But again, a conversation for another time. And that brings me back to phones, where I feel like sometimes the phones that, even though they are getting better, they're still not using the cost price, the resources they have for features that would make it a better experience. Like that phone you said, Brendan, you said it's great, but it's a bit slow. But then why did they put extra money into a feature like an under-screen fingerprint sensor? Surely it would have been better to cut the corner there and either offer the phone cheaper or have a better quality CPU, right? Wouldn't that have been better? And I saw these same compromises when I wrote about student laptops. If you try to find a laptop in the budget range, the specs they have make no sense. Like they say, oh, we've got a 2 terabyte hard drive in there, but then the CPU is awful. It's a CPU from like 5 or 10 years ago that's awful, and it's got 2 gigabytes of RAM or something like that. And it's just got these horrible specs, and then they try to sell you the device by saying it's got a carbon fiber chassis, and it's got a 2 terabyte hard drive, and it's got Windows Hello with a fingerprint sensor. And I can only assume it's because these companies, they can make it, it's probably a higher profit margin on a 2 terabyte hard drive compared to a better CPU. I obviously don't know the costs there, but I assume that is. And when I was trying to piece together a student laptop that I would use, I couldn't find one that was in the budget. So I had to say to readers, and I'll put a link to that story, you have to try and get those specs. And even if you buy a lower spec laptop, you can maybe then add something in. So again, like the CPU is the most important part, but then maybe you can get the lower RAM and then you can try to put your own RAM in there or something. But then on phones, you don't even have that option.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I really do like this mid-range segment. I mentioned it years ago on another podcast where I said the mid-range is where a lot of the good stuff happens, because there's none of the bloat of the high-end phones, but then there's also innovation to try to bring that tech at an affordable price. But I still think the manufacturers aren't there because they keep offering sales points. I don't know what you'd call them, you know, bullet points that will sell you something in a store, but are almost useless to you once you're at home and you're with the phone.
Yeah, so I think the point about performance is an important one. It doesn't seem like an important one at first glance. But it is rather important. However, what I am going to say is, while I was using that A32, there were some things that were really easy to do, like opening up the Netflix app and streaming a movie. Like, that was a really smooth, enjoyable performance. Browsing through Twitter was the same thing, a very smooth, like an unhitched performance. However, when it started to come to things like games, that's where you could see the holes starting to appear. And I think that that's where premium smartphones still have a place. Like Robin said, is they're kind of pushing the envelope, right? They're pushing forward with innovation and all these sorts of things. And I know I myself have said many times that the premium smartphone space is really boring these days. And that's because it's all just everything goes everywhere, right? I mean, I'm just looking at the specs for the Galaxy S21 here, right? It has an HDR 10 plus display that measures what is 6.2 inches. It's 1080 by 240p pixels. It's running Android 11 with the One UI 3.0 or 3.1. It's got 128 gigs or 256 gigs of storage. I mean, there's all these things. It's running the Exynos 2100 platform. There's all these great things, right? And what I like about premium smartphones is that you don't need to make a choice. You don't need to decide, is performance important to me? Or is the camera important to me? Like, I don't have to make that decision. I can literally just go, hey, I want the latest Samsung, and I get all of those features. But on the same token, I don't think everybody needs those features, right? Like, for instance, like, my father probably doesn't need an Exynos 2100 chipset with an octa-core CPU that's running at a peak of 2.9 gigahertz, right? He doesn't need that because it's too much power for him. But on the other hand, I might need it because, like, we review games and stuff, we review apps, and a good experience on that sort of stuff is really important, having a good experience with that, because you need to take the hardware out of that equation. So I think that there is room for both. However, I do think that, like Clinton mentions, I think that mid-range smartphones need to be a bit more cognizant of what features they're putting in and leaving out of their smartphones. Like, for instance, the A32, it has a monstrous 5,000 milliamp hour battery, right? Which is ridiculous. Compared to the S21, that only has a 4,000 milliamp hour battery, and it's double the price. So I think there, Samsung was kind of like, okay, well, battery is important to people, which it is, so let's give them that. But then on Samsung, right, you have the fast processor along with a decent-sized battery, and then you don't have to make that decision. And I'm hoping that in the next few years, as Robin mentioned, the features that we're seeing in the premium smartphone markets filter down to the mid-range market. And we are seeing that. As I mentioned, the under-display fingerprint scanner. Like other things, security solutions. Like, I would really like to see more attention being paid to security solutions and that sort of thing, right? Like, I mean, facial recognition is cool, an under fingerprint scanner is cool. However, I would prefer to go back to, I would prefer to have something like retinal scanning, right? Something that like Apple has or Samsung used to have. Obviously, that ship has sailed because now everybody wants a screen with no cameras, no camera bump. But yeah, that's what I like about premium smartphones, is I don't have to make a choice. But that leads to another question, is what features does one need, right? Like, what sort of features should you be looking for on a phone? I'm going to point this to you first, Robin. What, like, when you're looking at a mid-range smartphone, what are the features that are important to you? Or when you're recommending a mid-range smartphone, what are the features that you recommend to look out for?
So it's probably four in particular. Mm-hmm. I think a decently sized display, something that's full HD, so 1920 by 1080 resolution. As far as size goes, I think the 6-inch to 6.3 or 4-inch should be good enough for most people. Mm-hmm. I remember a time when I first started doing tech journalism where a 6-inch phone was like completely unheard of. That, yeah. When they still called them phablets.
Oh my goodness. I think
now it's still part and parcel, now it's kind of part and parcel of the experience to kind of. So I think that they're kind of 6-inch to 6.3-ish kind of range should be good enough for most people. Then battery, you're going to want something north of, say, 3,800 milliamp hours. Mm. I know that, for example, like you mentioned, that A32 has got 5,000. That Oppo A74 also has 5,000. So that looks like a feature that a lot of manufacturers are seeing as an area that can actually bump things up compared to other segments of the market. So a well-sized battery. I am less keen on fast charging, though, purely for the fact that it will quickly degrade the battery itself. Yeah. I've seen with a lot of devices that I get seeded, as in I'm allowed to keep after the review period, that a year down the line, that battery performance degrades significantly. And when we're talking about people that are using their phones, they're not in the position that we are, where we get to rotate phones fairly often. So if you're going to be keeping this phone for the next 2 or 3 years, that's going to be important. So I think the quick charging, although it is very handy to have, it's not necessarily going to be the most important. I'd rather have a larger battery that takes longer to charge than a smaller one that charges a lot faster.
And just an important note, sorry, Robin, just to add on to what you're saying, if the phone does have smart charging, just try and find out if you can switch that on and off in software. I know Android does allow that, so but that's just something to notice.
Yeah, I agree with that battery stuff. I'm just going to skip ahead to my turn.
Hang on, Robin's still talking. Robin's still.
No, I just want to say, please, guys, that's very important.
Yeah.
Then I think as far as the camera goes, which is probably the third element that people will be looking for. Mm. I don't really care much for front-facing cameras. That's because I don't take selfies as a rule. No one needs to see me with a duck face. But as far as the cameras on the rear, I don't think you have to go overboard with the kind of the triple lens setup or the quad lens setup. That's a bit of overkill. I think if you have a large enough primary lens, we're seeing north of like 40 megapixels in the mid-range space these days. You should be sorted. That'll give you enough megapixels to capture enough nuance. So if you need to zoom or crop or whatever you have to do for the image, you should be sorted. As far as the processor goes, I know that a lot of companies, especially Qualcomm now, are pushing the 5G as far as the system on chip. Again, I don't think that's necessarily needed right now, especially for South Africa, as we still await Spectrum. So I don't think you have to worry about that. As long as it's kind of an octa-core, it's clocking at around about 2.2, 2.4 gigahertz, you should be good to go. So those are kind of the key elements I look for a decent mid-range phone.
Clinton?
This is what I tell people every time. Go to the site GSM Arena. GSM Arena has something called a phone comparer. Take the phone you already have and plug it in. And when you see a phone that fits into your budget, put it into the comparison and look between the two. And then think to yourself, this phone that I'm using now, why do I want to replace it? And then go into the comparison and look to see if that new phone you want to get has that specification to a higher degree. So let's say you have a phone and you say to me, Clinton, the battery's terrible. Even when it was new, the battery wasn't very good. And now to replace the battery would cost too much. The battery was the biggest problem. Go into GSM Arena, look at the phones that are in your budget range, and then see which ones have the larger battery, which ones have the fast charging if you want that, which ones have the third-party support like a phone case that has a charger inside of it, a battery, I mean. So I never say to people, you 100% need X, Y, and Z, even though I would do that for a laptop, say. And again, I did do that for the student laptops. I think the way people use their phones are more specialized compared to the more generalized way you would use a laptop or a notebook. So whenever someone comes to me and they say, I want to buy a new phone, which one do you recommend? I never just blurt out X, Y, and Z. I always say, what do you want in a new phone that your current phone can't do? And then you look at what phones can do those better things and still fit in your budget. I always do that. It prevents the person wanting a new phone from getting discouraged because there's so many phones on offer. Mm. And it prevents me from, you know, sitting at home spending 12 hours trying to find a phone for someone. Because even if they don't know, you know, one Exos chip is better than another Exos chip, the phone comparer on GSM Arena will help you make that decision. And then there's a few things you need to take into account besides that, and I brought it up in accessories. If you get, you know, I'm using an Oppo now, and it's been fantastic, but the problem is, it's a simple thing. I can't find a phone case for it, right?
Mm.
And even though in the box you get a very thin phone case, it doesn't offer that much protection. And it's, I'm a little antsy that if I drop it, it's going to get destroyed. My old Samsung 9, I think it was a Note 9, it had a very beefy case on it, and it needed those because a lot of times I dropped it onto hard stuff like tile or concrete, and it survived because the phone case I chose was very beefy.
Mm.
And with the Oppo, I just don't have that option, and I can't even find one to import, let alone buy one locally. So there's a few external factors you have to consider aside from the specs, and even if you're not worried about accessories, what does the after-sales support look like? Someone might be willing to pay many times more than the specs of the phone entail because they know they're going to get a good warranty or good after-sales support or free screen repairs, because they might be one of those people who say, oh, I don't put a screen protector because I like using it without. We all know those people, and they need screen repairs maybe more than they need extra RAM or a better CPU, right? Yeah. You have to be honest. You have to be honest with yourself as a consumer and say, what do I need? And then go from there. So that's always my advice. Go to GSM Arena, speak to yourself, ask yourself what you need that your phone can't do, and find something in your price range that can do the things your phone can't. And the last thing is, we're all adults. If you can buy a phone, you're probably an adult. Don't get caught in debt because you want a phone that's very flash and very fancy. Never spend more than you can afford. You don't want to be, you know, bankrupt or in heavy debt for a phone, of all things.
Mm.
So, yeah, after-sales support and accessories and then financing are two things that a lot of people don't think of when they're buying a phone, and I really think more people should consider.
So, my advice is, if you're looking for a premium smartphone, do what Clinton said, go to GSM Arena and then look for the one that has the biggest numbers. And I'm not even being funny or facetious here, I genuinely mean that, because that's what this has become. In the premium smartphone tier, it's literally who can make the biggest numbers when it comes to camera, when it comes to processor size, when it comes to battery size. It's all just how can we have the biggest number. There are some things, though, that I think are superfluous, like 8K video recording. Nobody needs that. You think you need 8K video recording, but you really don't. 4K, I would say, is also kind of neither here nor there. What I would say, however, is that if you want a premium smartphone, the best feature that you should look for is 1080p video at least 120 FPS. If it can go higher, great. If it can't, maybe look for something else. Mostly because that's where you get slow-mo, that's where you get like just some really cool features. You can get some really nice smooth shots, that sort of thing. If you want to do video content, then look for a camera that does good 1080p at a high frame rate. 4K, I don't think that smartphones are really in that space just yet. You might want to rather just opt for DSLR if you really absolutely need 4K video footage. And even then, make sure that you have a computer that can edit 4K video footage, because that's another thing to consider. In terms of like operating system, obviously you want the latest and greatest. But I do just want to mention something that neither of you mentioned with regarding mid-range smartphones, and that is micro SD card support. So one of the ways that manufacturers keep the cost of their mid-range smartphones down is by paring down the amounts of storage that you have. But the upshot is that you can use a micro SD card with many of these phones because they do still have that feature. Like, for instance, the Galaxy S21 series doesn't have a slot for a micro SD card, while the Galaxy A32 does. So if storage is important to you, which I think it is in this day and age for everybody, whether you're filming video or taking photos, that is something that you should consider, and making sure that you get a decent SD card, obviously. And one other thing that I want to mention is connectivity. Robin, you did touch on this with regards to 5G, but I just want to take this a step further and go to wireless. So something that's becoming a lot more popular now is Wi-Fi 6 or Wi-Fi 802.11ax, which is becoming a lot more popular now, especially as We move forward towards 5G and the Internet of Things and many more devices being in your home. If you have a lot of IoT stuff and you are already in that Wi-Fi 6 place, unfortunately, you're going to have to wait a little while longer for Wi-Fi 6 support to come to mid-range smartphones. A lot of the premium smartphones do have support for Wi-Fi 6, so that's not something you really need to worry about there. But like Robin says, I think 5G in South Africa is kind of a non-issue at the moment in South Africa. Maybe in a year or two, our tune will change. But yeah, those are the things that I think that you should look for in any phone, especially if you're looking at premium phones. Like, I know that people get caught up with the 100x zoom that some people have. I think that's a stupid feature that nobody needs and nobody actually uses for anything useful. So things like that, I think people should avoid. Avoid the marketing, the marketing buzz, right? Like, they're telling you can do up to 100x zoom. Just stop and think to yourself, how often am I really going to use that feature? And
your
that goes,
video looks shaky as hell.
Exactly. Unless you're sitting on a tripod and there's no wind and you never touch the camera, 100x zoom means nothing to anybody. So I think just like Clinton's advice is really good, ask yourself what you need and be earnest with yourself. Do you need a processor that's running at 5 gigahertz on a smartphone? No, you don't. Nobody needs that, in my opinion. So maybe look for something that doesn't have that. Even in the premium range, right? I don't like Samsung's Plus series, which is the top of the range. I really don't like those smartphones because I feel that there are too many features that nobody uses that just inflate the price. So even in the premium smartphone tier, ask yourself what it is you need. Do you need a good camera? Do you need a fast processor? Do you need a big battery? Do you need a headphone jack? Unfortunately, you're not going to get one of those. Do you need Bluetooth 5.0? Do you need Wi-Fi 6? These are questions that you must be asking yourself before you part ways with your money, because just looking at dollar pricing for the Samsung Galaxy S21 Plus and Galaxy S21, there's about $100 difference, $150 difference in the price. So that's not a small decision that you're making. It's definitely something that you should be thinking about, is what features you need. What are you looking to get out of your smartphone? The next thing I wanted to talk about is, and I'm going to come up short on this one, is physical features that are still in budget smartphones but aren't in premium smartphones anymore. So I'll kick us off. Last year, Apple decided to take the charging port or the charging plug out of its premium smartphones, and everybody is now following suit. Earlier this year, we reviewed the Galaxy S21, and it didn't come with a charger. We tried to get a charger from Samsung because we wanted to test the fast charging out. That never happened, so we could never really test the fast charging. And yeah, it's a kind of an annoyance for me. The other thing that is really annoying for me is the headphone jacks, which have all but disappeared from smartphones. And now SD cards are just also becoming a thing of the past. So I want to ask you guys, are these features still important? Is a headphone jack still important in an era where everybody is making wireless earbuds and that sort of thing? Are physical features important in smartphones? Let's start with you, Robin.
Yeah, 100%. The last thing I want to do is hear your terrible EDM on your phone because you don't have headphones and there's no headphone jack for you to use. So yeah, I think it is a crucial element to have that, for example. And again, I think the fact that we saw Apple and Samsung do it for a selected amount of phones, I think that was more marketing spin than anything else. And hopefully the execs can kind of see that it's actually going to backfire on them down the line. I also see that a lot of Chinese manufacturers, your Oppos, Huawei, Xiaomi, they don't do that. They'll give you everything in the box that you should need. So I really do like that. Yeah, so as far as those elements, you still need them because, like we mentioned when we chatted about the chargers for Apple and for Samsung, wattage is very, very important because the battery capacities are getting larger which means you need a higher wattage charger to support that as well. So those physical elements are vitally important.
Clinton, physical elements at a phone, are they important?
Yeah, 100%. I'd say out of all of them, unfortunately, the charger BS is the biggest one to take note of, because especially if you're counting every cent to make the most out of your budget to get a phone, if you buy a phone and then find out that it doesn't have R1,000 plus charger in the box, that's going to blow your budget right out of the water.
Mm.
Now, thankfully, like Robin said, a lot of the Chinese manufacturers and a lot of the budget manufacturers are still throwing them in the box. But again, it's just, it's another thing you need to be cognizant of. It's, you know, when people say buying a phone or any piece of tech is complicated, I think we as people who cover tech might scoff and say, oh, it's not that complicated. But then when you take a few seconds to think about all the stuff you need to think of, and then consider that you might not be familiar with what the terms are, like wattage of a charger. If you told somebody who's completely tech illiterate what that means, you'd have to sit down for like 30 minutes. So I completely understand that. So charger is one of the big ones. And don't feel dumb asking a sales representative in the store, does this come with a damn charger? Yes or no? If no, how much is it? And do I need the expensive one to get all the fast charging benefits?
Mm.
Don't, yeah, it's very important. And a lot of them have nothing to do with price aside from the charger, because these companies are obviously making extra money by making you buy it separately. But stuff like the headphone jack, as far as I know, the companies aren't saving money by not including that. So it's just stupid that they're not including certain things like that. And again, the SD card reader and the amount of space, again, that's something you need to ask yourself. Are you taking 30 4K pictures or high resolution pictures every day? If yes, then you probably want a lot of storage and you want an SD card. Yeah, it's just something else to consider. It is very important. I wish chargers were just standard. I can't believe they aren't.
So there is one feature that I think is an absolute necessity in this day and age, and that is NFC, which seems silly. Talking about NFC in 2021, but I say this because wireless or contactless payment solutions are very, very popular at the moment. And unfortunately, this is something that I think the mid-range, or at least the mid-range phones that I've been playing with, need to catch up on and need to have wider support for. I think that's one sort of physical feature that I wish we saw more of. Especially as relates to things like F&B Pay and Samsung Pay and Apple Pay and all of these things. Thankfully, here in South Africa, we don't have access to all of them. I know Apple Pay recently launched in South Africa, but it's not available at, I think it's everywhere but F&B. I mean, it's available everywhere but F&B is what I meant to say. I mean, that I think that's something to also consider in terms of physical stuff, which is something that's present on premium smartphones, but not necessarily on your budget smartphones. So that's something that I think is important to have. Wireless charging, I don't think is an important thing to have in premium or budget smartphones. I know that it's something that is marketed till the dogs come home, but I don't think that it's something that you absolutely need, especially when these companies are now taking chargers out of their box, expect you to buy the normal wall charger, and then also expect you to buy a wireless charger. If you have a wireless charger, sure, great. I mean, then that's something that you wanna carry on using. But then you likely have your head tuned to what to look for in a smartphone. The headphone jack thing, I've complained about this for my entire life, it feels like, and I will complain about it until I die, because I still think that it's one of the most useful little ports that has ever been invented, and I wish that they would just bring it back. Please, please, please. We really, really like it. Like, not trying to be funny here, but we really like it, so bring it back. But yeah, I think that these are... I think that, like we've said all along, is that you need to look for what it is that you're looking for. But I think the most important point here is that it's not really about raw performance anymore these days. Obviously, if you want to have raw performance because you want to play games and stuff, that's something that you should take into consideration. But for the average person who's going to work every day, using their phone for GPS and that sort of stuff, like, there's definitely a phone for you that is affordable, that matches your budget. You just need to be a little bit less quick on the trigger when it comes to spending your money, because there are so many phones. Just one final note, because it's been brought up to my attention a couple of times. People have asked me about Huawei's latest phones. And while they might be really good performers, one of the issues with them is that they don't have access to Android officially, which makes using them very difficult. And that's why I think we've kind of avoided Huawei during this conversation. Because, I mean, if you've been using Android your whole life or up until this point, chances are good that you are entrenched in that Android ecosystem. You are using Gmail, you're using Google Maps, using Google Drive, using all of the Google products. And if you switch to Huawei, you all of a sudden have access to none of those. I know there are workarounds. I can hear everybody shouting at me that there are ways to work around that. But, like, legitimately, there is no way to get Google apps on a Huawei phone. And I know that Huawei has its own ecosystem, and I'm very impressed that they are doing that. And I support what they're doing. But in good conscience, I can't tell folks to go and buy a Huawei phone when I know that a lot of people that are doing that are in the Android ecosystem and need those Android apps to get through their day-to-day activities. So with Huawei, I would really ask the sales assistant what sort of support they have for Android apps, and hell, even ask the assistant to power on the phone and ask him to download the Google Play Store. And if he can't do it, or they can't do it, rather, then you don't want a Huawei. But yeah, it's a tough one, especially when it comes to selecting smartphones. But I think we covered a lot of good advice here, especially for the mid-range market, which I think is one of the hardest places to pick a smartphone for. Like I said with premium, you get everything, right? You get the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the latest stuff most of the time. But when it comes to budget smartphones, you gotta be a bit cleverer about this. In terms of phones that you would recommend, do you guys have any recommendations off the top of your head that you would give to folks, Robin?
I wouldn't necessarily say phones, but there are certain brands that I recommend. I think Huawei. Nokia is one that I would recommend, purely for the fact that it runs pure Android. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to worry about skins or access to apps. You got the pure version of Android on that. They're also relatively well priced. I think they could do a bit better as far as processing power goes, but they usually go with Qualcomm as far as their CPUs go. Mm-hmm. So you're pretty well sorted on that respect. Oppo is a brand that I have recently come in contact with, and I think they're doing some really nice things there. They very much seem to me like to be the new Huawei as far as the mid-range space goes. The premium devices, we're not seeing many of them come into the country yet, so we have to see what happens there. But in the mid-range space, I think probably Oppo and Nokia are two brands that I would say you can trust.
Clinton?
I don't have any brands to talk about. Like I said, when you're looking for a phone using GSM Marine or whatever, you should be kind of agnostic. But something I do want to bring up is, if you need a really budget phone for an elderly member of your family, don't look past feature phones that can use WhatsApp. I've seen a lot of these popping up recently, and they seem like the best of both worlds. You have a feature phone, which is all most people, you know, elderly people need or tech literate people need, but then you also have WhatsApp, so you can speak to them without paying for data. Without paying for SMSs and calls.
Yeah.
So I just want to, I know we were talking about budget smartphones,
but it's a good piece of advice.
I also want to talk about, not a lot of people know that you can get feature phones with WhatsApp.
Yeah.
When I told people, they're actually quite taken aback and they had no idea such a thing exists.
Yeah.
They're usually sold in phone stores or places like Pep or even Pick and Pay sell them. Go check them out if you need something really cheap that can still use WhatsApp. And aside from that, use GSM Arena to go through those steps I was talking about earlier.
So Robert mentioned Oppo and Nokia, which I think are very good recommendations. I'm also going to throw Samsung into the ring here because my experience with the A32 was really, really good. And with LG no longer in the mobile phone market, and they used to make really good budget phones. Cannot stress that enough. Really, really good budget phones. Now they're not there. I think Samsung is the next best option. But I mean, everything that we, all the brands we've mentioned so far in this AfriCast are good mid-range brands. So check those out. And yeah, hopefully we can help some folks choose a new smartphone, especially as the mid-year approaches and it's cold and things are dying. And maybe if you need a new smartphone, this has helped you out. I just know that I get this question so often, and it's usually the same piece of advice. Now at least we have a podcast we can point people to, right? So that's going to do it from us for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Keep warm this weekend, and we'll see you next week. From myself, Brendan Larch, cheerio. From Clinton Matos.
Oi.
And from Robin Lichetti.
Take care, everyone.
We'll see you next week. Bye. If you're one of those users who makes use of portable hard drives, make sure you safeguard it with a 2.5-inch Orico nylon portable hard drive case. Available in 4 colors, it's an inexpensive solution to keep your data safe. For an added layer of protection, Orico also has the 2.5 USB 3.0 external HDD enclosure. Excited to try out the range of Orico products? They're all available from TakeALot.com.